Date is January 2nd, 1995. We're sitting in the living room in the farm in Herman with Mother. And we're going to put some medical information as it might relate to the three Hind sons on this particular tape. And okay. As a starting point, maybe we ought to start with you. Your problem has been breast cancer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything you know, I mean, is there any specific type of breast cancer, or is breast cancer sort of breast cancer?
As far as I know, breast cancer is breast cancer. However, I was in remission for 5 years, very happily, and then I got cancer elsewhere. The tumor is in my left armpit, and I did have a tumor on an indication of cancer on my breastbone and someplace else bone, but those two disappeared. Tests 2 years apart. So soon I will be having more tests and we'll find out where it's gone.
Okay. Near as we can tell, you had the cancer, it went into remission, cancer came back and was spreading at least to your arm.
Mm-hmm.
And, as near as we can tell right now, it's back in remission.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
But we'll look for it.
In any case. Okay, so breast cancer seems to run in the family, or at least in...
Just me.
Just you. Do you know...
Dee Dee had skeletal cancer and maybe something else.
Okay, before we go to Dee Dee, let me ask one other question relating to you. You have a type of arthritis.
Yes, I have rheumatoid arthritis.
And it's rheumatoid as opposed to what the other type is.
Yeah, okay. It's rheumatoid.
Okay, then now let's go to Dee Dee, your sister.
Dee Dee, I never exactly knew, but I think it was skeletal. And there may have been something else involved. Anyway, she, too, died of cancer. And I think you should someday ask Lex.
Okay, but to the best of your knowledge, it was cancer.
It was cancer, no question.
And is my recollection correct that she developed a great big tumor in her stomach or side?
I do not know.
Something you don't know that?
No.
Okay.
They were very uncommunicative about it, and so I really, honestly do not know.
And do you know approximately how old Dee Dee was when she died?
She died in 85, and she was 16 months older than I.
Okay.
You do the mathematics.
So she would have been born then in...
She was born in...
1916?
16.
So 16 to 86 would
85.
Be 85. I can't add two and two without my, that would be 75. So she was in her 70s.
No, well, her 60s, I think. Well, turn 16. It off and I'll do a little mathematics.
16, 26, 36, 46, 56, 66, 76, 86 would have been, she would have been 70 if it had been, if she died in 86. So she was 69.
Okay.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, well, let's continue then on your side of the family to grandmother and grandfather Hulbert.
Well, the surprising thing to me is that a year after sister died of cancer was the year that I developed cancer, 86.
Okay.
My mother died of cancer. She had a brain tumor, which stayed the same for 10 years or so. It was discovered when she was carrying my little brother, baby, and she fell down the steps, and Dad took her to the doctor, and that's when they discovered it. But Sis and I didn't know anything about it until about 8 years later. They didn't tell us. You didn't talk about things like that when I was growing up.
Okay.
Anyway, she died of a brain tumor. She'd been in a hospital on Long Island for about a year because it finally started to grow and develop, and they said they finally operated and she died. So that was cancer.
Okay, do you know how old she was when she died?
No.
Or approximately.
She was born in about 86 or something.
It'd be 18.
I think she was very young. I think she was early 50s when she died.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And she would have passed away in what year?
44.
44, during the war.
Yeah, 44. Dad died of an embolism of some sort, a blood clot that finally went to the heart, and he dropped dead on the sidewalk.
So in Grandfather Hulbert's case,
that's your grandfather,
Uncle Dutch.
You called him Grandpa Dutch.
Grandpa Dutch.
Uh-huh.
In his case, death was sudden because it was mm-hmm. a clot that moved mm-hmm. somewhere.
Yeah.
It wasn't cancer
no.
that we know
no.
of.
Matter of fact, except for that blow to his leg, and I don't know how he got it, I never knew my father to be sick.
Okay, so let's review this. I think we talked about some of it before the tape was turned on. Grandfather hurt his leg somehow and developed a...
He kept that leg up for a long time.
Okay, could he walk on it?
Or? Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. So he was still up and around.
Yeah.
And then he, at some point, something broke loose. Mm-hmm. How did he hurt his leg? Was it a...
I don't remember, honey. I don't remember.
A bruise-type injury?
He lived in St. Louis, and we lived in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
And he would come every Christmas, maybe sometimes in between times, and I really do not know how he hurt his leg.
Okay. And do we know how old he would have been, approximately?
He died in 52, a year after Henry was born. And his birthday, I believe, was 1888. And I think Mother's was 1895. So those
1888 would leave 12 years in the last century and 52 years in this century, so that would be 64.
Around there, yeah.
Would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, then on...
How old was your father when he died?
He was 60.
60?
Right. Okay, then... Going back on your side of the family, do you know anything about the medical history of your grandparents?
Grandmother Cody, mother's mother, died in October of 38, and I think she died of cancer, but you did not talk about that in those days.
Okay.
You went to the office with the red door.
So she lived to be significantly older
than
your mother did.
She died in the middle of the night, and the only thing that leads me to believe that she died of cancer was Mother said, oh, she must have suffered so much.
Okay, so...
Anyway, Grandfather Cowdy died at the age of... I had his death certificate... of, I think, 96. And it was plain every day old age.
Oh. Fair enough.
Yeah, plain every day. His name was Horace Cowdy.
Okay.
And that's fair enough.
So then on your father's side.
On my father's side, mother. I don't know when his mother died, who was Nanny. And there was something wrong with her, but I do not know. I was never told, but she was in her 70s. And Grandfather Hulbert, I have no idea what happened to him, but he would have been 70s or 80s.
Okay.
But there's no cancer there as far as I know.
Okay, then on your side of the family, can you think of any, you know, major life-threatening kind of diseases that you're aware of? No, just cancer. Your brother died in an airplane crash.
Yes, he was killed in an airplane crash.
And so really what we know about her, you know, on your side of the family is there is some cancer that we know about in the family and blood clots.
And that was an accident of some sort that I don't know anything about. I mean, I probably was told, but I simply do not remember.
Okay. Then, moving on then to father's side of the family, for the record and for the tape, father died at the age of 60 from cancer of the pancreas.
Is that what it was?
That got him rather quickly. You know, he was gone within 3 or 4 months of when he was
diagnosed. Yes, except that he told me that Christmas when he called, he said that he'd been feeling pretty rotten in the stomach. And I said, well, why, did you go to a doctor? And he said, no. So he had had some troubles ahead of time.
Right. But okay, but in any case, after it was diagnosed, and that, I believe, is pretty standard. Cancer of the pancreas works quickly. In any case, that's what he died for, and he was 60 years old, and that would have been in 1977. Then, let's go back and think about grandmother and grandfather.
Right.
Do we know what grandfather died of?
No. Kurt told me after one trip that he had some sort of kidney infection, a bad kidney infection. Now, Grandfather Hein was ill for several years anyway before he died. And when Kurt went out there one time, they put him in some sort of a hospital nursing situation. You'll have to get Aunt Ruth on this. I honestly do not know. And I do not know what... I have a feeling that being one of those brothers, that he probably died of cancer. But I have no confirmation.
Okay, well, my recollection is he died, it would have been in 1958 or 59.
It was 59, I believe, because
we were at Kennebago. And do we know how old he was?
No. I have no idea.
In any case, okay, so we don't know. Then on Grandmother Rose's side, she passed away when I was at the University of Colorado.
Okay.
I remember that, which would have made it in the, you know, 66 to 67, 68,
I would think
like that
she was probably in her 80s when she died. And I have no idea.
What she died of. Perhaps old age.
If you call Ruth, get in touch with Ruth, and you'd better do it soon because Ruth has 5 years or so on me.
Okay. And speaking of Ruth, then, do we know, to our knowledge, she hasn't suffered from cancer or anything of that nature?
I do not know about that.
To our knowledge, we
now. Your grandfather, Hein, had three brothers and a sister, but the three brothers all died in 42 and all of cancer.
And
they called it in those days stomach cancer. So it could have been pancreatic or, you know, anything under the sun.
Could have been any number of things. So grandfather Hein had three brothers, and there was some sisters in there also, right?
Aunt Nell was the only sister, and
grandfather's brothers died of similar things in the same time frame.
All in 42.
All in 1942, and that would have been...
And they all knew that they had cancer, but they didn't realize that their brothers had cancer.
Okay, and that would have been Uncle Kurt...
Uncle Alfred and Charles, maybe?
The other one, which is on...
It's on your list.
Which is on Henry's genealogy chart.
Now, Aunt Nell died in 55. I have no idea of what. I have a feeling it was pneumonia or something. And just before we went on our Western trip. And we stopped at the house going through Poland, Ohio. Do you remember?
I remember.
Okay. I do not know what the brother's children, Kurt's cousins, died of.
Okay.
There was only one girl, and that was one of Charles's daughters who died of cancer. One Hine girl. But it seems to have affected the males as opposed to the females. Now, that honestly is all I know. I have no idea about my great-grandparents. I know that my grandfather Cowdy's mother lived to be about 98. And as soon as she died, Mother said, I'll never go to another family party in my life.
I command the farm to come.
They had to go. There's a picture someplace of one of these great Christmas parties or something. And I was about 2 years old.
Up in North St. Louis somewhere?
No, it was in Springfield, Illinois, I believe.
I thought I remembered you said it was somewhere up in North St. Louis.
No, that was another kin of grandfather's who ran the slave railroad. Underground.
Okay, so that's about all we know about medical history, and I'll make sure that Greg and Henry get a copy of that. Okay, let me just...
There's a genetic mistake.
Well...
When you look at a family like this, it's a genetic mistake.
No, and then in this day and age, they're beginning to identify things, and I'm... Next time I get, I'll transcribe this, and next time I get a physical exam, I'll make sure that the doctor, you know, knows what seems to run on which sides of the family, and, you know, that might be.
But I do think you should get in touch with Ruth as soon as you can.
Okay.
On Holger's side.
I've already given that to him.
Yeah, we've pretty much been through that. Okay, well then, we'll move on. I'll just... For the purposes of getting it on the tape, I want to review what I wrote down here a few minutes ago as far as where to go look for genealogy history.
Is this going on that?
Yes.
Oh.
I hope so. It's supposed to be. It still says record, and the tape is still turning.
Okay, go for it.
So let me just review this. One place to look for information about relatives on your side of the family is the Daughters of the American Revolution files, mm-hmm. of which we have some here.
Have my number.
Right, you have your number and some backup information, but then it's also your understanding that wherever they keep the centralized records for the Daughters of the American Revolution...
Mm-hmm. It's in Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C., is going to have that information. So that's a source of genealogical information. Also, in St. Louis, at the Jefferson Memorial Historical Society, in Forest Park mm-hmm. in St. Louis, might be some Holbert and or Cowdy
mm-hmm.
records, and you think that the records may be at an old synagogue at Wydown and Skinker.
Which is now their library.
And that's the library.
It's still the Missouri Historical Society
or whatever. So that's mm-hmm. the Missouri Historical Society.
I'm not sure. I think that's the Jefferson Memorial.
It's no longer called the Jefferson Memorial. Well, just old people like we know that it was called the Jefferson Memorial. It's called the Historical Society Building or something.
Okay, then...
Anyway, not hard to find.
So, and in any case, there, to the best of your knowledge, there are some records there that pertain...
Well, one or the other. I don't know where they turned in their records, but one or the other.
Has some records on the family. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then I also, on my notes here, show that Bell Fountain Cemetery in St. Louis, the records department at the gate.
They know who's buried there.
Knows who's
and
buried there.
And there are a lot of Cowdies.
And there are a lot of Cowdies. And Cowdy...
And Seward, maybe.
Swords and Cowdy. Cowdy was maybe your Seward. Mother.
Cowdy was my mother.
Your mother was a Cowdy. Okay. And so a place to look is the Bell Fountain Cemetery in St. Louis. Then the other source we have here is the Seward Mansion in Auburn, New York, which is in western New York State, west of Syracuse.
Yep.
And you visited there in 1980 on the way to Lex's.
Was it 80?
I think it was 80.
I think so. Wasn't it?
Something like that, on the way to Lex's, one of Lex's weddings.
Mm-hmm.
And you indicate, according to my notes, that there's lots of Seward genealogy, being a Seward museum. And they even had records on the Missouri Seawards.
They had those little books, I think, from every state. I'm not sure. I just saw the Missouri book. And there I was. And it was written by Uncle Upton, I think. Upton Cowdy.
Okay, I have that here. And you saw a little red or maroon book, mm-hmm, that had you in it.
Yes.
As a two-year-old or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that goes back a ways.
Yeah.
Okay, and then...
But we didn't have time to explore and look up genealogy. We were on the way to New York. We
exactly, to, yeah. But there's a source of family
That's
history
That's nothing
there.
But source. Because that was William H.'s house, and it's a big mansion. Victorian-type towers.
Okay, and this was the mansion of the former Secretary of State.
Right.
Now famously known for Seward's Folly.
Right.
And now you have to park on the street. And so it's a busy place.
I want to know, as relatives of Seward, why we're not getting little royalties off the oil that they're selling up there.
I don't think he retained the oil right.
He didn't retain the rats. Slight oversight on his part. Let's see, I think you said that through the DAR records or something, you have reason to believe that your history can be traced back to the
1600s. 1607.
In Jamestown?
Mm-hmm. Only he must have got out of there, because something happened to the entire population of Jamestown.
I've forgotten all my history, but yeah, yeah. Something. They all starved to death that winter.
Or the Indians got them or something.
Okay.
So that's as far back as I know.
Read Chesapeake by James Mitchell, and I'll tell you all about it.
Didn't tell me a thing.
I did read Chesapeake.
It told you what happened to Jamestown,
didn't it?
It did.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, and where is Jamestown? Virginia?
It's right not too far from Williamsburg.
Okay.
This
wasn't where the Pilgrims came.
No.
No,
they
no.
came up, they were up in Massachusetts.
They scooped up. Cool country.
Yes, okay.
Now, I do know that the Cowdies and so forth, it was rumored that Seward was misspelled, that it was really Stuart, and it was misspelled.
Oh, somewhere along.
Anyway, English, French, and Scottish.
Okay.
Background. Cowdy would have been.
Right,
Cowdy would have been French.
The name Pine, am I remembering correctly that there's, or at least on some side of the family, the Hine name came from
Wales.
Wales.
Your father said, yeah.
Welsh, I think.
Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with German.
Well, a lot of people seem to think that, oh, Hine must be German. And
yes,
my recollection is that it was Welsh.
It's spelt wrong for a German name. The Welsh have names that are that long, and I'm very sure that it was a cut-off name. But your father said they were Welsh.
Okay. Okay. And I have some recollection that somewhere I heard there might actually be a little German in the blood, but...
I don't know.
That's not where the name Hein came from.
No. It's misspelled.
I think we did find some Hein cognac or something.
Yes, that's French.
Was that French? That wasn't German? That was French?
No, that was French.
No, in any case.
And it's very good cognac, if ever you want to buy any.
Okay.
Then, I think it has a few little deer down at the bottom of the label. And
I remember it in New Jersey. It used to be, somebody gave it to us or we bought it somewhere, and it floated around the house in New Jersey for years, probably aged real well.
No, I think we drank the bottle and kept buying another bottle.
Well, in any case, we have no indication as to what that was.
But that was French. So.
Okay, well, let me, using Henry's ancestors of Edward K. Hein Jr. as a guide here, and start with your side of the family. We, of course, know all about you.
I don't know a thing about Matthew.
Oh, where's Matthew on this thing?
Matthew was grandfather's father, I think.
Matthew Cowdy?
Uh-huh.
Okay, he's on the list here. Yes, he would have been Elizabeth Seward Holbrook, that's you.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Hazel Elizabeth Caroline Cowdy.
His daughter, my mother.
That's your mother. Boy, is that a name, a mouthful. Hazel Elizabeth Caroline Cowdy.
She had three brothers.
Okay, so well, they're not on here.
Mm-hmm.
So your grandmother had three brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved
They
back.
Were all, I understand, they were all over 6 feet tall, and mother was 4 feet 11 or 10.
Oh, your mother was short, huh? You mean there are short genes in my
uh-huh.
in my gene pool somewhere?
Right.
Okay, and your mother's parents were Harriet Verner Shipley.
Varner.
Varner. Harriet Verner Shipley and Horace...
Riesley
Cowdy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and is it the Shipleys that you indicated that the McKelveys seem to think are a big family name down in Memphis or somewhere along the river?
Right.
But we know nothing about whether there's any connection there or not. And then...
Grandmother had a brother down there. His name was Uncle Will. And she would take sister down to Memphis to see Uncle Will. She never honored me in that way.
And that was grandmother, and so that would have been her brother would have been a Shipley and...
Will.
And...
William, I judge.
William Shipley, and he was in Tennessee.
Uh-huh. And he died...
So what the McKelveys said adds up here somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There could be some connection to
absolutely.
Memphis Shipleys.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So maybe we've got... maybe I've got a lot of long-lost second and third and fourth cousins and whatnot.
I don't think Uncle Will was married.
I'm sure you do. Everybody does.
Well, but... okay, but there could be a Memphis connection here. So.
And some of that family silver that I have... that we used to use in the kitchen, that heavy, heavy stuff, that came from the Shipley side of the family.
Okay.
That's one reason I want it back so badly.
Okay, well, maybe it's been in Tennessee before.
Oh!
Maybe this isn't...
Half of it came from Tennessee, half of it grandmother had. And when Uncle Will died, grandmother gave the second half to mother. That's why we have 12 of everything instead of 6 of everything.
Okay, I'm looking at this again. Do we know, let's go back, and do you know where your mother was born?
My mother was born in St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay, and how about her parents, which would have been, do you know where... Hazel Elizabeth Carolyn Cowdy.
That was my mother.
It was your mother, that's right. Okay, I'm at the wrong level here. Okay, her parents, Horace Reesley Cowdy, and do you know where he was born and came from?
No, but I have his death certificate, so I could certainly look it up.
Okay, well, but, okay, and then Harriet Varner Shipley...
Was born in Pittsburgh.
Was born in Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh, because her mother went upriver, or downriver, upriver, I guess, on one of her father's boats, and she was born in Pittsburgh.
Hmm.
But okay. They lived in Memphis.
Well, you float up and down the river, huh?
All right.
Okay, then on the Cowdy side, we go back to Matthew Cowdy and Mary Margaret Seward, which
I
seems to be where the Seward name comes in. Mm-hmm. So really, where the Seward name comes into all of this is through Mary Margaret Seward, which mm-hmm. would have been your, let's see, that's your mother, that's your grandparent, this is your great-grandmother then.
I don't know where he got that information. I thought she was a little further back than that, like about three grades.
Oh.
But I don't know.
You don't know. Okay. Then on your father's side, who is a Clarence, huh?
Uh-huh. That's why he used the initial C.
Knew him as Grandpa Dutch.
Yeah.
Okay, and you grew up, let's go through your history in St. Louis. You grew up in Van Deventer Place in St. Louis.
And other places.
Yeah. Where, what other places? And when?
Lived with the Hobards in Ferguson for the first 6 months or first year. Dad told me after the Second World War, nobody would rent to anybody with small children. People had a hell of a time. And I said, well, that's just terrible. And he said, well, Betts, it happened to us when you and sister were born. We could not rent an apartment.
Hmm.
And so we went out and lived 6 or 8 months with the Holbirds out in Ferguson. Have some wonderful...
Holbirds meaning his parents?
Mm-hmm. Right. Have a wonderful, some wonderful pictures of those days. Then, I remember that Mother and Dad got an apartment down on Forest Park Boulevard. A red brick apartment, and there's a picture of me on the little funny porch out front, crying my eyes out. And, one of my favorite pictures. And then, we moved.
Then you moved to Clayton.
And then we moved to University City.
Oh.
And the first place was 6414 Cates Avenue. The second move was 721 Limit Avenue. And the third move was 7629 Wydown Boulevard. Now, how about that? I remember all those numbers, and I can't stand to remember numbers. 7629 Wydown Boulevard. And that was a great place. It was the second and third floor, so it was like a house on top of an apartment.
Right at Hanley.
Right at Hanley. And there's somebody who graduated from Mary Institute who's living in that apartment now. Then we moved to Vandeventer Place.
Okay, then you moved to Vandeventer.
Yeah, and I can't remember if it was 76 or 78 Vandeventer Place. I can't remember.
So, okay, and what was your father doing to earn a living during all these years as you were growing up?
Oh, well, I can remember when he and somebody else were making tubes for toothpaste. He worked for Mallinckrodt. Was that a chemical company, John? For a while. And then he moved. He was the executor of a very large estate, and that's where he stayed.
So where did he go to college, or did he go to college?
He went to one of Washington University's. I don't understand this, but he played football for Ferguson for a while, and then he went to Washington University, had two private boys' schools. And one was manual training, and the other one was Smith Academy. And he went to one of those. I don't know which one. Then he, now I don't know whether he ever graduated or not, but Washington University was involved in there eventually. And then he went to night school, Washington University Business School at night. I remember that when I was little. I mean, I was around then.
So he had some business training.
Oh yeah.
If nothing else. So, but he was then locally in St. Louis educated.
Yeah.
As it were.
Or the surrounding business. Now the reason that Mary Institute was built, Washington University was built by a gentleman named Elliot. And his wife became very angry one night when there was a Smith Academy and a manual training for men and Washington University and nothing for girls. Her name was Mary Elliott. He built Mary Institute for his wife. And it was about 150 years ago.
Long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so in any case, so grandfather was locally educated. How about grandmother?
Mother?
Your mother.
St. Louis. She graduated from Soldan High School.
So she grew up.
And that was it.
She grew up in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And so she did not have a college education.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
then
Soldan, would that have been about right? I think she went to Soldan.
So then your father did several jobs and ended up finally as the administrator of some kind of an estate, or was it an estate or a trust, or do we know what the name was?
Yes, Collier.
Collier.
Collier, C-O-L-L-I-E-R.
And that was, I mean, that was just somebody who had died and left bunches of money, and somebody needed to run the foundation or estate or what it does.
Right.
Does it still exist?
Oh, I don't know. I would think so.
Okay.
It was rather
large. But anyway,
large.
So it was a large enough estate or foundation that it needed a full-time administrator to do whatever
they did.
Yeah,
and I wish I could remember his secretary's name. She was a prune face, and very, very stern. You know, if one of us would walk in the office with grandmother or something, this tall, skinny, stern, she looked like a wicked witch.
The east or west.
So the Collier Foundation or whatever had an office somewhere.
Yeah, it was downtown on Broadway, I think.
And so your father would get up in the morning and go down to the office.
And he always took public transportation. Streetcars or jitneys or something. I never remember Dad driving downtown. Everybody took public transportation.
Okay, and how old were you when you moved to Vandeventer? You moved into your mini mansion?
I would say probably 11, maybe 10.
Okay, so you're still a little munchkin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For some reason or other, they put me down at the house and said, Betty, wait for the moving trucks. And I didn't take a book with me. There was absolutely nothing in the house. And I stood there for about 4 hours waiting for the moving men to come. That's probably what taught me to always take a book with you wherever you go. Anything.
So then, how long did you live at Vandeventer? Did you live there until you moved to New York?
Was in 1938 or 9.
Okay, so how many years would that have
been? I don't know. Figure it out.
Was it 5 years or 10 years?
No, it was 10 maybe.
So it was a while.
Yeah.
Do you know if you rented the place on Vandeventer or whether you owned it?
Mother owned it.
Your mother owned it.
Mm-hmm.
Not father, huh?
Mm-hmm. No, mother owned it. Well, this was a peculiar thing in St. Louis. Mother had to divorce Dad in order to sell the house. Now, I can't tell you why. there was a legal, maybe so that it was, maybe women weren't supposed to own property in those days.
Huh.
Screwball thing.
So they got divorced to sell the house. And then did they get remarried again?
No, because mother died.
Oh.
I mean, <it's, laughs> she wasn't around anymore.
There's a little tidbit I'd never heard, uh-huh. I hadn't heard of before. Now, as I recall, I mean, the Van Deventer house, this was a big place. Or mini mansion. Didn't
yeah.
you have a ballroom or something?
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these old houses around
all
here
houses
all have
place were big.
Have what they call
five,
ballrooms.
Four, five, six bedrooms and someone bigger than that.
The, well, I don't know. I think our house had 16 rooms.
No.
No, I don't know.
16 rooms?
Yeah. The, but upstairs, even here, the farmhouses have what they call today ballrooms. Well, what they really were places for people to spend the night. Even in Van Deventer Place, if you had a party, people would come out from the city. Now, we were downtown when I lived there, but people would come out from the city in carriages, and they would have to spend the night. So every house had one of these great big rooms where people could spend the night on a pallet.
Just put a bunch of mattresses up there or something?
I guess they did. I don't know what they did.
So you didn't...
They were also ballrooms.
No, they could have parties.
Did you have parties up there?
No, we never did. There was enough room downstairs to have a party here. We didn't have to have our parties upstairs.
So you had 16 rooms or something?
Yeah, 15 or 16.
Now, how old the house? I presume this was a...
It was built in 1870-something. I don't know.
Oh, okay, so it was a pretty old house when
mm-hmm.
you...
Yeah.
When you moved into it. And,
it still had the gas lights on the walls.
So you had big living rooms and formal dining rooms. And
they hadn't been converted?
No, they hadn't been converted to electricity. But that's all right. There was no gas. And I don't remember whether they were or not.
Well, you did have gas.
Yeah, but it wasn't connected to those fixtures. We had six fireplaces.
Six fireplaces?
Three on the second floor and three on the first floor.
And it was this kind of, did you have full-time maid or maids or?
We eventually had three full-time servants.
Full-time? Live-in?
Yeah.
They had maids' quarters and?
Mm-hmm, on the third floor.
Third floor, is that up where the ballroom was? You had three full-time...
Now, Sis and I didn't know this, but I've sort of put it together in my mind. The gate on that picture, I was teaching Josie how to drive. Did I tell you this?
Oh, I think
And she
you did.
Ran up the steps.
Right.
Okay, Josie was an upstairs maid, and she took care of little brother and all that jazz. Very shortly after that, we got Eric. From someplace down south. Josie was Irish, and so was the cook. All our servants were Irish, and they came through the same agency. And Eric suddenly appeared, and he did all the driving. Eric was a young black. I think he came to us when he was 17 years old, 17 or 18. But he lived in the summer.
Had your mother reached the point where she could no longer drive?
That is exactly, I'm sure, what happened.
Yeah.
Because mother had always driven. And I think because of the brain tumor, the doctor probably said, no more driving. So they had to get someone to fill in. Well, Eric did everything from gardening to mowing the lawn to driving the car to serving dinner, you know.
Chauffeur and
yeah.
back totem.
Okay.
Butler. Yard man.
He needed a little training when he came.
Did these houses have big yards or little yards?
Well, ours had a little one. Some of them had bigger yards. But they were not big.
They were at least 100-foot lots. No, less than
okay.
couldn't be.
So these were a bunch of mansions sitting right next to each other. They weren't.
I could get in my shower.
They weren't on acre lots or anything.
No, I could get. I could take my shower and talk to the girl next door who was standing on their steps, inside steps. And I can't think of her name at the moment. Grace Taylor. Grace would stand on the steps, and I'd look out the little window from my shower, and we would talk. So it couldn't have been more than 8 feet between. Well.
So this not on the leader. Okay.
As you remember, well, you maybe don't, my brother was the only serviceman that served on the Marine Olympic shooting team, non-commissioned officer. He had a wonderful time during the day, but at night he had to go back to the barracks and all the officers went out and had fun. He was an excellent shot. Excellent. He had superb vision. Anyway, Dad felt that everybody should know how to shoot and knew how to take care of weapons properly. If you walk down the steps to our cellar, of course, here was Eric's room and there was a bathroom and there was the laundry, and walked back, then there were coal pits. What did you call those coal pits?
Coal bin.
Coal bin, where they'd throw the coal in from outside. Uh-huh. And you shoveled it into your, and then it went on all the way to the back of the front steps, long. Dad put targets up at the end of that, at the front steps, in the cellar, in the front steps.
You had an indoor shooting range.
Exactly, and that's how my brother learned to shoot.
Oh, okay.
It was almost as long as a regular
Target range,
yeah. Yes.
And your brother's name was?
Earl Seward.
Earl Seward. Mm-hmm. And what we're talking about, and he died in an airplane crash. And do you remember when that was?
No, I don't. I could look it up someplace. It was around 49.
Okay.
And
your brother was, as I recall, significantly younger than you.
Yeah.
12 years.
12 years, I think.
12 years younger than you. And Dee Dee was 2 years older than you?
16 months.
16 months,
years,
okay.
Yeah.
A year and a half older than you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and he was Earl
Seward.
Seward, but that's not what we called him. We called him Uncle Herky, was it?
Yeah, you called him Uncle Herky. We called him...
why did we call him Uncle Herky?
He got that at camp, I think.
Oh, and did he... He went to Mowgli?
Mm-hmm.
So Uncle Herky,
Earl. One of, when he met Bill McKelvey, before Kurt and I were married, he came up to me and he said, "Mother, I think that's Bull Moose." And I said, "What?" He said he was a junior counselor at Mowgli and everybody called him Bull Moose.
That's Bill McKelvey.
So... one day, I went up to Bill McKelvey and said, "I understand your name is Bull Moose," and Bill was furious. He didn't like that name at all. So, he had been a junior counselor when Herky was there.
Oh, so, then...
Herc went for years.
Went to Mowgli, at that point in time, not knowing any of the McKelvey connection, you would ever have a McKelvey connection.
No.
That was total coincidence.
Total coincidence.
So, for whatever reason, your parents decided to send him to a camp, and somehow the name
he went
Mowgli
to another camp, Sebago or something in Maine, and injured his knee. And Mother was furious because she was never told. And he didn't have proper medical attention, and he had trouble with that knee for years. But, so the next year...
They still let him in the Marines.
You bet they did. The next year, Mother found Mowgli for him. And he must have gone to Mowgli for 4 years.
Oh, I don't know. In those days, it was... people living in St. Louis would send their kids as far away as New Hampshire to camp. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sebago was in Maine, I believe. Sebago.
No, was Uncle Herky, or was his name also Bud or something?
His name
remember
Bud,
that also.
Yeah.
So it's Earl something or other, Bud, Uncle Herky, Hallberg.
And there
was he, okay, he was in the Marines before he died.
Mm-hmm.
Was he in World War II at all, or did he miss that?
He missed it.
He missed World War II.
However, he was in the 1st Marines, which were a pretty active group.
Okay, well then, speaking of camp, did you and Dee Dee go to camp?
Oh, I went to camp for 2 years, loved it. One was in Missouri, in mid-Missouri someplace, down near Hillsdale. And it was a big old farmhouse that had been made into a camp. And that's where I ate poison ivy.
all kids do at camp, isn't it?
Anyway, the next year we went to camp in North Carolina.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that still exists. Jane Hotze's niece went to Greystone. Maybe it's sort of a Mary Institute tradition or something. I don't know. But anyway, and I always loved camp.
Okay, so now moving off in a different direction. At some point, okay, so your father was the administrator of the Collier, whatever it was. At some point, didn't he work for Emerson Electric?
Yes, he did, but that was much later.
That was later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Much later. Yes, because he liked Stuart Symington. And Stuart Symington was then the CEO or something of Emerson. Mm-hmm. He thought he was a great guy.
Oh, okay. Then, let's see, so at some point you all packed up and moved to New York.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And
of course, because of that move, that's how I met your father.
Right. Okay, and let's review that for the tape.
Your brother, Gregory, I don't know where it came from, but there was a picture of me sitting in front of one of the buildings at Yale in this drawer. And I got it out, and I said, hey, I was pretty cute. And your brother said, may I have that picture? And I said, yes. So Gregory has a little picture of me sitting in front of one of the Yale football games.
Okay. So anyway, so you all went to New York, and you went to Finch.
No, I went to Finch before.
Oh, you went to Finch before everybody moved to New York?
Yeah.
Now, Dee Dee went to Finch also?
Mm-hmm, and so did Janie Moore.
Right.
That's how you met
Janie Miller.
And okay. Sister introduced Janie Miller to Bill. Bill Miller.
Okay.
And that's how Janie met Bill. Which I don't think there were too many years that she was happy about that.
I remember Dave's sister.
Okay.
But Janie used to come out to see me when we lived on Greenbrook Road. And you came first, and then Larry was born. And Janie would pass that hill every time she'd come out, and she always called it Janie's Hill. And then one day they were able to buy it and build their house up on the hill.
Okay. So then you ended up meeting Father at Dorset.
Yep.
As I recall. Yeah.
Well, I told you about Howard Bird and about how I met Bob Nims in his hospital room. And then Bob took me out on occasion.
That's right. When Howard Bird was
in the hospital,
you ran into Bob Nims on the elevator going to the room.
And, no, then we met in the room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so that's how I met Bob. And then Bob he was in medical school, so, you know, he wasn't very available for dates. But he would take me out when he could. And he invited me up Labor Day weekend. And what I did, that was my vacation time, And what I did was go up to visit Howard at Weekapog, Rhode Island first, and then I took a bus from Weekapog up to Manchester where Bob met me. And Bob said, "We're having extra guests in the morning. Their names are Gordon Hickenlooper and Kurt Hine." And that's how I met your father.
Oh, okay. Well, Dorset was a long way from anywhere in those days.
Well, it certainly was. And Weekapog, Rhode Island was not on a mountain drag. But the funny thing is, buses ran. You know, New England buses all over New England.
Okay. Now, was this when Father was still in college, or was this after?
No, this was 41. He graduated in 39.
Right, so Father was living in New Jersey and designing propellers.
That's right.
When you met.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Father arrived at my office in New York City the next day after we got back from that weekend. And he said, "Well, I came over and I saw an eye doctor, which gives me an excuse. Would you like to have lunch?"
Oh, really? Oh, okay. So, where were you working then?
I was working.
You were not at Finch anymore.
No.
You're working for the cosmetic company
now? Yeah, but I can't remember. It was sold. And I can't remember what its name was. Originally, I was working for Charles at the Ritz.
Yeah.
But then the company was sold, and I don't remember. Eventually, the company bought Revlon and, you know, a thousand other things, and it's up in a suburb of New York. It's no longer downtown. But I can't remember. Anyway, it was the executive offices of beauty shops. They had, golly knows how many, 15 all around the country or something. And upstairs in this old building, one of the old buildings in New York, was the factory. And we used to laugh about the grease that they'd take off the elevators and put in the face cream. Of course they didn't, but you know.
Great. Oh, yeah. And I thought of something else. Didn't you at some point when you were young hopped on an ocean liner and went over to Europe or something?
Mm-hmm. I sure
and
did.
When was that? And where did you go in Europe?
36.
So that was when you were still living in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Effie Zybig and I, well, you see, that's how I wound up at Finch. I was set, Madam Lincoln, Miss Chaperone, took proper girls to Europe twice a year. Once in the winter, which was a very long trip, and once in the summer, which was a shorter trip. Well, I was signed, you sign up when you're born. It's one of those things, you know.
Oh.
And so I was to go to Europe the fall after I graduated from Mary with a group of girls. Well, that trip was canceled because of the war business in Europe.
Oh, I think in 36?
Hitler had just walked into some place, Czechoslovakia or something.
Things were starting.
Oh, okay. And so that trip was canceled, and Madam Lincoln said that she would try for January. And my mother said, "Well, you're not going to sit around the house all fall." So she picked up the phone and called Finch, where sister had graduated. And they said, "Oh, we would be very glad to have Harriet's sister."
Wait a minute.
This was in September.
But wait a minute, if you just were getting out of Mary Institute.
I had already graduated from Mary.
But you and if Dee Dee was only 16 months older, how could she have graduated from Finch? Already?
She was in school 2 years ahead of me.
Oh, she was 2 years ahead.
But
could you graduate from Finch in 2 years?
It was first a finishing school, then a junior college, and then a four-year college.
Oh, okay. So.
And then it went belly up. The Anyway, your mother said, you're not going to sit around here. Well, I wanted to go to Finch as much as I wanted to step into the... what, a septic tank.
You weren't excited about going to New York?
Indeed, no. Uh-uh. And anyway, I went. I loved several things about Finch. I loved being in New York. We had a box at the opera. We had a box at the symphony. We could go to plays anytime on weekends that we wanted to buy a ticket. And we discovered that if you stood at the ticket area about 15 minutes before the show started, if there were any tickets left, they'd give them to you for 10 cents. So we girls would go down on Saturday afternoon, you know, our 25 cents, you know, nothing at all. And I loved being in New York. It was a pretty good, exciting time.
Okay, so then you went to Finch for a while, and then you got on a boat and went to Europe.
Yes. The following summer.
Okay.
And it was a nice big boat called the Normandy.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
Uh-huh. And we came back on the RMS Elonia into St. Lawrence River. It was only 10,000 tons. It was a little tiny ship. And it came into the St. Lawrence River, and we got off in Montreal and took the train to Toronto, and then the train to St. Louis to get home.
Now, where did you go in Europe?
France first. And then for the first time since World War I, Madame went to Germany. I wanted to go to the Salzburg Music Festival. And Madame had not been back. The Germans killed her husband during the World War I. And she'd never been back to Germany.
Oh, so she was German?
No. Madame Lincoln was Tennessee, I think. A wonderful chaperone.
But her husband was an American soldier killed by the Germans. I see. Okay.
Anyway. She
made her living by taking people to Europe.
Yeah. So we did go to Germany. And Effie got sick in the hotel in Heidelberg. And the doctor that was sent up had great scars on his face. Have you ever read anything about the dueling that used to go on? It was a matter of great pride to have been slashed across the face with a...
Oh, great.
Yeah. Scared Effie to death. Anyway, we went to France, Switzerland, Germany, Italy, and England.
So you didn't... How long was this trip?
Well, it was a good bit of the summer.
Oh, okay. So it was a major trip.
Yeah.
How many people on the trip?
Effie and me.
That was it?
Mm-hmm. See, the girls that we would have gone with in the winter finally got off in, let's say, the end of January or February and took half of their trip.
Oh.
And so when I got back from Finch, Effie called me and said, Betty, we missed out on the last, but I'm going with Madam this summer. Do you want to come with me? And I asked Mother, and she said, sure.
So it was just two of you and the leader?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, a private tour of...
Right.
Of Europe, okay.
So.
Okay, well then, what? Actually, last night when we were, you mentioned the group. Who were Father's skiing?
Peter Garrett, Bob Mims. I think there was somebody from Montclair whose name was Count something or other. Gregarin. Gregarin.
Doesn't ring a bell.
And I don't know who else. Those are the only ones that I ever met.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it in the book, Curtis Wright?
No, these were Yale people. These are not Curtis people.
Ford.
Yeah. And Howard Byrd.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, and when did you all operate the Vernon Ski Tow? I mean, I vaguely remember that.
I would say 45 to 50.
So it was quite a few winters.
We kept it 5 years. Made money 1 year.
We lost money the rest of the time. Yeah. And that was you and who else? The Walkers, was
the
it?
The McKelveys.
McKelveys.
And then the McKelveys moved to Long Island, and the Walkers took over their interest.
Okay, so that explains that.
Yeah, and Woody and Carly met up at the ski tour. He was working a brand new employee and was working in Bill McKelvey's office. So Bill and Kurt, of course, would get anyone they could to come up on weekends and help them fix up the place. And Woody was one of those. And Carly and Charles had gone all through school and college together. So Charles told Carly about the ski tow, and Carly was then working in New York City, and so she drove out and met Woody at the ski tow.
Oh. Okay. All these people are connected somehow.
Sure. And I have to excuse myself, so turn off the machine.
All right. Okay.
I'll be right back.
Okay, we're back. Oh, and I...
Don't you want to see where we were?
On the tape?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're wherever we were.
Okay.
We were talking about the Vernon ski tow, but I think we've talked enough about that. Let's see. We were talking last night. Is it the Eastons or something that were related to... He was Einstein's nephew? Is that what you said?
That is what the McKelveys told us.
And
he changed his name.
And Mrs. McKelvey's sister
married him.
And do I not recall that you ran into Albert Einstein at parties?
I only
at
met
place,
him
or?
Once. No. Only met him once. And as I recall, we were with Bill McKelvey and visiting his, David Easton's office. Now, David Easton was president of some sort of a company. We were visiting there, and we met him very briefly. Hmm. I mean, just how do you do? Yeah.
Old Albert just happened to be around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, you know, I had no idea. But anyway, it was just a very, very brief encounter. There was not even, how do you do, how are you today? It was just a handshake.
Oh, I'm looking back here at the your ancestors, and we didn't talk about one of them here. We went through, this must be, let's see, that's your father. So your grandmother on your father's side was Ella Knowles.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know anything about the Knowles?
She was born in Weedsport, New York. And we stopped there, and of course the records are all gone. And we didn't have time to dig up the Historical Society to find out what they had left or anything.
Okay, so the Knowles connection here comes out of New York.
Weedsport.
Weedsport, New York. And that, again, we're now back to the Hulbards. So actually, New York comes in here from several angles. The Seward angle comes out of New York.
Mm-hmm.
But that was on your mother's side.
Mm-hmm.
And on your father's side, we've got some Knowles coming out of New York. And then there was...
Now, the Knowles family moved to the Midwest. And Moberly, I think it was. Now, the Erie Canal was transportation.
Right.
And Moberly was the railhead for everything that was going west. And I have a feeling that her father must have been in transportation some way, and they ended up in Moberly. She met the woman who eventually married Uncle Ernie. Both of them were volunteers for the American Red Cross. And the Spanish-American War came along, and they met the Hulbert boys.
Okay.
And so Alice married Ernie, and my grandmother married Henry.
So Uncle Ernie Where does he fit in here? He would have been your father's brother?
Well, I thought so the whole time I was growing up, and then I discovered he was my grandfather's much younger brother.
Oh.
Huh?
So Uncle Ernie, who I met once in Phoenix.
Right.
In the rest home in Phoenix, he was your grandfather's...
He was my grandfather's uncle.
He was your grandfather's uncle, not your father's uncle. Mm-hmm. But he was a Hulbert. He was
a Hulbert.
His name was, full name was...
Uh-huh. I think...
Ernest Hulbert or something?
He bounced around a bit. I had a book of his, and maybe I still have, that says Ernest Lucan. And there was a woman up in Moberly that Dad used to take me up to see. She had a farm up there, and there were strawberries. First strawberries I'd ever seen, and the first feather mattress that I'd ever lay down upon, which covered me over and scared me to death. And I have a feeling that was my dad's aunt.
Huh.
And so this, her name was Lucan. And I don't really know how this gets together, but Ernest was Grandfather Hulbert's brother.
So Grandfather Hulbert, in your case, was... Henry E. Hulbert.
Mm-hmm.
So Uncle Ernie
was his brother.
Was Henry E. Hulbert's brother.
Right.
Okay.
And he was only 6 or 8 years older than my father.
Okay. Keep everybody thoroughly confused here.
No, growing up, I thought Uncle Ernie was Dad's brother.
Did your father have brothers?
No. He had no brothers. Uncle Ernie told me one year that he had had two sisters Dad had had two sisters who were born before he and neither of them lived.
Oh, okay.
But that's sort of a story in itself. He was born in Moberly, Dad.
Your father was born in Moberly.
And the doctor said, you'd better get him down to the city. He's going to need a lot of medical help.
Oh, and where are your parents buried?
Dad's in Moberly. And mother is in Grandfather Cowdy's burial, not casket, in the ground.
Plot.
In Belle Fountain.
In St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, before we run out of time and tape here, let's move over to what you remember or know about father's side.
Mm-hmm.
Of the family, and I'm thinking let's go to Homer Henry Hine, Grandfather Hine. Do you remember things like where he went to college? And
he went to Case Western, what is it now, Case Western Reserve? I'll ask John when he comes back.
Okay. Now, he was born in Poland, Ohio.
As far as I know.
Along with all his brothers.
Yeah.
And sisters, and then somehow went to Case. That sticks in my mind, though.
Okay, it's changed its name in the last 15 years or something, and I can't remember.
Where is it located?
I think it's in Cleveland.
Okay.
And it was an engineering school.
So Grandfather Hine had an engineering background.
Yeah, right.
Then, and it was Uncle Kurt who was his...
Hey, John, what was Case, the university's name? Case Western Reserve, what was it?
It was Case University.
Well, what was it before that?
It was just Case.
No, it was Case Western Reserve.
Western Reserve.
All right.
Okay, and it's in Cleveland, is that? Or do we know where it is? We're thinking of where Grandfather Hine went to college.
Case Western Reserve is what I remember.
Well, they joined.
All right, fine. Well, what's its name now?
Case Western.
All right, and where does it live? In Cleveland?
I think it's in Cleveland.
Okay, that's close enough.
Okay, well, that's enough of that. Now, Then his grandfather's brother, who father knew, or I've known as Uncle Kurt,
mm-hmm.
or Great Uncle Kurt, or whoever, he was the one that went to Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute,
indeed.
Wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Indeed.
So that was grandfather's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Matter of fact, Mrs. Case and Uncle Kurt put a lot of money in RPI.
Mrs. Case?
There was a Cates.
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 Okay. Then, while I'm thinking of this, this is on a slightly different tangent. Mm-hmm. Where does Cornelia W. Hall fit into all of this?
I don't know, but I have the feeling that all these Cateses and Halls and so forth came in with Emma Kirtland.
Okay, because
when she
there
married.
Has been this Cornelia W. Hall Trust.
That's right. That's
that,
right.
You know, father and therefore
mm-hmm.
Kids. The kids were involved in, and I was
just
thinking.
Was that ever settled?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's settled as far as we're concerned. In any case, yeah, I was just thinking of this thing that Henry sent me, and there's nothing on here about Cornelia W. Hall.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, so that's back there somewhere. Okay, back to, do we know any, or do you know anything about what all I know about Grandfather Hine is that he ran the Salmon Bay Sand and Gravel Company or something, which must have provided enough income for them to retire. I have some recollection that he might have run an auto dealership
in
Seattle.
He did, up in Mount Vernon.
In Mount Vernon.
And that's where your father was born.
Washington.
In Mount Vernon, Washington. And your grandfather had an automobile thing.
Dealership.
And then they moved down to Seattle.
Where he got involved in the
sand and gravel
business.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And let's see. And do we know how he got to Seattle?
Sand and gravel.
No, but I mean, how did Grandfather Hine, who was born in Ohio, end up in Seattle?
All right. When he was a young man, about 23 or something, he was told by the doctors in Ohio that he really should go south. I don't know. I think he had some sort of lung trouble. Or maybe getting pneumonia lots or something. Anyway, so he went south, and he just kept going. He worked for, I was going to say Bell-Tel, but I don't know that telephones were much in people's houses. Maybe he worked for the electric companies. And so he went down south someplace, across the country, and then up to Seattle.
And eventually he wound up in Seattle for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, Uncle Kurt lived in Pennsylvania or something?
No, he lived in Pittsburgh for a while.
That would be Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh. And he knew the McKelveys.
Oh, there was some story about how when father went to Yale,
he was not supposed to look up the McKelveys.
And father just accidentally ended up and became friends with Bill McKelvey. And it turns out that Uncle Kurt in Pittsburgh and the McKelveys in Pittsburgh were longtime enemies or something.
Uncle Kurt had told Kurt not to get involved at all with the McCulloch family. And it may well have been a question about who was richer, you know, Uncle Kurt or Mr. McKelvey. Kurt met him. They were assigned seats next to each other alphabetically. Everything went alphabetically at Yale in those days. You know, if you were in a lab, you were A, B, C, D, E.
Right.
Well, H seemed to sit right next to McKelvey, and McKelvey came into class one morning, drunk as a skunk, in his top hat and tails, and sat down next to Dad, your father. Well, they quickly became very, very fast friends. And I don't think Uncle Kurt ever knew it. I hope to heaven's name that he never knew.
Well, in any case, in some part of the country there were the Hatfields and the McCoys.
That's right.
In Pittsburgh there were the Hines and the McKelveys. Okay. And then
what business were they in?
Well, that's a good question.
I don't
remember what business Uncle.
Conflicting business.
I have no idea.
Made enemies.
I have no idea.
Okay, so Uncle Kurt then, I gather Uncle Kurt in Pittsburgh never had any kids of his own.
No.
And he sent or paid some of the bills for Father at Yale.
I think your father kept a notebook, and everything he spent, he put in the notebook, and he, kited some of his figures, and so Uncle Kurt supported him through college, never said a thing about it. Henry kept a notebook, and I discovered when he showed me his notebook that his expenses for his last year in pharmacy school, which I paid, were exactly the amount that I got from your father's insurance. I think Henry kited a few numbers, too.
Okay, well, in any case, my recollection is correct that Uncle Kurt helped support Father at
Indeed
Yale.
Indeed he did, and I think he did the same thing with Ruth.
And somehow Father managed to afford flying lessons out of that.
Uncle Kurt never knew that.
Right.
Other things.
Somehow, as I recall.
And he and Bill McKelvey went up there to learn how to fly together.
So Uncle Kurt never had any kids, so he sort of adopted your father at Yale. And weren't there, while we're on the subject of Yale, Father, I believe, am I correct in recalling, he also had some kind of a scholarship at Yale.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some family member back, probably on this church somewhere, had donated, or is there a Kirkland Hall or something at Yale?
There was a Sheffield Hall, which was the engineering school in a very old Victorian building, which I understand is no longer there. But Uncle Kurt and Mrs. What's-her-name helped build several buildings up there for schools,
Yale.
At Yale. Yeah.
And that was Uncle Kurt, who went to RPI. He didn't go to Yale.
No.
But he helped. So there was some...
So there was family interest. And all of this interest, I'm sure, came down through Emma Kirkland.
Oh, okay.
You know, the hall, the Cates,
Okay. And, yes, there was some buildings or some scholarship or something or other that applied.
There was a scholarship?
No, but maybe that's something when Kurt and Charlie get to be that age, maybe there's a scholarship waiting at Yale for them.
Well, all those small scholarships were all put together into one big bag some years ago. But I'm sure there are records that any Hine would have scholarship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we're running out of time here. I want to quickly go over and get it on tape.
Here comes a car.
As far as what we know about Grandmother Rose Hine.
Oh, turning around.
Well?
Rose Hine, I believe.
You should get that from Matt Ruth.
Right, but what we know about it at this stage of the game, you mentioned the other night you thought that her previous last name had been Turner. And that sticks in my mind from somewhere.
I don't know whether that was her maiden name or her first married name. Yeah. But I think you should get that from Ruth, because I have all different types of stories, and Ruth should know the real McCoy.
Well, let's quickly put what you know on tape in case I don't get...
She was sent to Wisconsin to aunts or cousins or something for school. Kurt always called it college. Well, what it was school, high school. And she came back and taught music.
This was in Idaho?
Mm-hmm. And she would get in the carriage and go see that family and their children, and that family and that family. She did had a circuit for music lessons. And somehow she met this Mr. Turner, we'll call him, and that's how she got West. Through her first marriage.
What we do know is that there was a first marriage.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's how she got West.
Oh, and then there was something about how her first husband died or something.
He was killed hunting, and Mr. Hine was one of those hunters.
Was in the hunting party.
Yeah. And so he went to see the widow and got to know her. And
ended up marrying the widow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what else do we know about Rose? We're about to run out of time here.
That's really... Ask Ruth. Ask Ruth and get the honest... Well, maybe she doesn't even have the honest stuff. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, this is just a good time to get family rumors on the tape.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time. We got 1 minute till football.
Feetsball.
So I'm going to turn this off and say thank you, Mother. And how do I turn it off?